It was finally here. The new virtual reality technology that I had been hired to test was finally in my possession. I'd been an AI game tester for this company for the past few years, but this piece of software was one of my most anticipated releases, and I'd been desperate to get my hands on it. Now, the dream had become a reality, and I was able to test the game itself. It was late on Thursday evening. Outside, the world had gone quiet, the sky speckled in shades of dusk. But inside my apartment, I was about to start a new adventure. Making sure I was comfortable, I set the VR headset over my head and booted up the software. The game's loading screen appeared before me, and I went through the customary routine of creating a new user. It was supposed to be a life simulator that prioritized building relationships with the in-game characters and exploring the in-game world. I didn't know many other details, but I had seen glimpses of graphics and gameplay, and it looked incredible. After a brief loading screen, I found myself waking up in the game world. My avatar was modeled after my real-life appearance, so it was all incredibly lifelike, as if I was waking up in the real world. I brushed through the tutorial stage with ease, figuring out the controls and functions with the help of the game's intuitive system. I left the small building that served as my in-game lodgings, and stepped out into a semi-futuristic world that the developers had done an incredible job of crafting. It almost felt real, and yet the stuff of dreams at the same time. "You must be James," a voice said on my left, and I turned to see a woman with striking bluish-gray eyes and long blonde hair. She was stunning, easily the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen, both in the VR world and in real life. Something about her bright gaze, the confident smile, was captivating. When I realized that she was waiting for me to speak, I quickly cleared my throat and nodded. "Yes, James, that's me," I fumbled, standing up straighter. Even though she wasn't real, I felt like I should at least try and make a good impression. Her smile widened. "I heard you'd be joining us," she said, her hair bouncing across her shoulders as she nodded. "It's good to have you here."
I'm excited to be here," I said, surprised at how realistic the conversation felt. Like I was talking to a real person, not just an AI program.
"Oh, I forgot to introduce myself. I'm Layla," she said, pressing her hand to her chest and giving a pleasant little bow. "Now, allow me to show you around, since you're new."
As she showed me around the starting area of the game, I found myself completely and utterly entranced by her. She was humorous and kind and responded to all of my conversation points perfectly. There also seemed to be something flirty in her tone, too, but maybe I was just imagining that, since that's what I wanted to hear. After she showed me around, she disappeared to let me explore on my own. But I couldn't stop thinking about her. Was that the last time I would see her? Was she one of the main NPCs in the game, or just someone who showed up at the start? If she was only someone who showed up at the start, then I would easily go back and start over just to talk to her again. I rushed through the starting game missions, hoping we would cross paths again soon. I must have been playing for hours by that point, but I was still completely immersed in the gameplay and had no interest in life outside of the VR system. Whether it was midnight or 2 a.m, I wanted to keep playing, in the hope that I would be able to converse again with Layla. Luckily, that wasn't the last time I saw her. I cycled through all the dialogue with the other NPC characters, and finally, the game sent me back into Layla's path.
"It's good to see you again, James," she said when she saw me.
Yeah, I missed speaking with you," I said unabashedly. She threw her head back with a laugh and leaned a little closer.
"You know, I missed you too. How about we go somewhere quiet and continue our conversation from earlier?"
I grinned. "Sounds like a plan." Over the next few days of testing the company's new game, Layla and I grew closer.
Maybe it was just the way she had been written, but everything about her felt so real. She really was the perfect woman. At some point, our relationship must have progressed in-game, because the next time I saw her, she started treating me like I was her boyfriend, holding my hand and giggling and flirting like we were the only two people in the world. I knew I had feelings for her, but this was the first time it felt like she actually reciprocated them. It didn't feel like a matter of course in the game either, but something we had built together. A few weeks after meeting Layla, however, I noticed that something seemed off. After a while, she started acting distant and distracted whenever she was with me. Our conversations lost luster, and I got the sense that she was bored with me or our relationship. When I asked her if everything was okay, she would just brush me off like I was being silly. One night, once everyone else in the company had gone home, I hung back and sneaked into the mainframe control room where the game logs were stored. I didn't technically have clearance to be here, but it was the only way I could figure out if there was something wrong with Layla's character. An unforeseen glitch, perhaps, that was making her behavior strange. I walked over to the large array of monitors at the end of the room and logged in, pulling up the data files for the various AI characters in the game. I scrolled through until I found Layla and clicked on her name. The screen was immediately filled with logs of speech and interactions with a number of users. So far, the game was only released to game testers like myself, so there shouldn't be an awful lot of data to crawl through. As I examined the data, I noticed a pattern. Shortly after I had met Layla in the game, the logs showed an increase in her affection levels too, she had started speaking to another user. At this point in time, her affection levels for that user were significantly higher than they were for me. So, what did that mean? That she had found someone else? Someone more interesting and worth her time? Did she no longer want to be with me? Anger bubbled up inside me at the thought of Layla flirting and getting closer with someone else, while she'd still been leading me on the whole time. Frustrated, I clicked on the user to see who it was. Sarah Milligan. No way! Layla was cheating on me with my boss? A sinking pit of despair opened up in my stomach, full of anger and betrayal. Of all people, it had to be my boss? Leaving the control room, I hurried back to the VR set and entered the game. I had to confront Layla about it. I had to know if it was true. As soon as the game loaded, I went in search of Layla.
James, sweetie.
Her sweet, sing-song voice faded when she saw my face, and the facade immediately dropped. Sarah, huh? I said, anger lacing my voice. A mocking smirk crossed her lips, and she sneered down her nose at me.
Oh, you found out, did you?
She said, her tone deeply patronizing, like she was talking to a child. Is that really how she saw me? Something she could mess around with for the fun of it?
Yes. How could you do that to me?
She threw back her head and laughed. Now before, I had found the motion sweet and endearing. Now, with the derisive laughter spilling from her lips, it only enraged me further. She kept laughing and laughing, and I wanted her to stop, but she wouldn't. In the end, I threw myself at her, hands outstretched, wrapping them around her neck. Her laughter gave way to screams, but still she wouldn't shut up, so I squeezed tighter, her skin burning beneath my hands. How dare she make a fool of me and then laugh in my face! I don't know what happened next. Something in the game must have crashed, because the next thing I knew, I was alone, surrounded by darkness. And that's where I'd stay. Without Layla, I was nothing anymore.
Stop dawdling and get that luggage up the stairs! I called behind me, with a sigh as my new husband struggled to carry two very small suitcases up the plush carpeted staircase. Honestly, He looked so pathetic, with the sweat beading his brow and soaking through his shirt. If he couldn't even manage something like this, why did I bother marrying him? Sorry, they're very heavy, he gasped, pausing to take a breath. I rolled my eyes, cringing as a few other guests shot him a concerned glance. We were only a couple of hours into our honeymoon, and he was already making us look like idiots in front of everyone. I really didn't see why my family liked him so much, or why I had agreed to marry him in the first place. "Would you like some help there, sir?" a voice said, and I glanced up to see a man, quite a few years younger than me. Tall and broad, with dark hair and a handsome face, offering to take the luggage off my husband's hands. "We can't keep that lovely lady waiting all day, can we?" he said with a wink that made my cheeks blush. That was how I should be treated on my honeymoon. "I can manage," my husband insisted with a frown, and I rolled my eyes again. "Honestly, Jack, just let the nice man help you," I said, flicking hair out of my eyes to get a better view of him hoisting the suitcases easily into each arm. "Lead the way," he told me with a charming smile, and I giggled as I led him to our hotel room, leaving Jack to trudge along behind us, looking sour. It was his fault for not managing such a simple task in the first place. The handsome young man set our bags down in our honeymoon suite and shot me a wink as he told me to have a nice trip. As long as I'd be seeing more of him, I was sure I would. "That was mean, you know," Jack said once we were alone in our hotel room. "You didn't have to show me up like that." I waved away his concerns.
"Oh, it was just a little bit of lighthearted fun. Don't worry, darling. Now, shall we go down and enjoy the pool?"
Jack sighed, rubbing his eyes. "I'm a little jet-lagged from the flight. I think I'd like to take a quick nap first. Then we can go down." I sighed.
"You're such a bore. Well, if you don't mind me getting a head start..."
"I do, actually," Jack said. "It's our honeymoon. We're supposed to do things together." I gave him a short look.
"You're the one who wants to go for a nap on our honeymoon," I said, using the same tone of voice. "If you'd rather stay here, that's fine, but I'm ready for a swim."
I grabbed my towel and sun hat and flounced out of the room before he could utter another complaint. I wasn't going to let my honeymoon be ruined by a boring husband. As I had hoped, the young man from earlier was down by the pool. He introduced himself as Damien, and we spent the next couple of hours flirting with our legs in the water, sipping on cocktails and enjoying the sun. We got on so well. I almost forgot I was supposed to be on my honeymoon with someone else. By the time midday rolled around and Jack still hadn't shown up at the pool, I told Damien I'd better check on my ridiculous husband and promised I'd see him again later. Because what was a honeymoon for, if not a bit of fun? I headed back up to the hotel room and knocked on the door, since I'd forgotten to take a key with me. When I didn't hear any movement inside, I cursed. Jack had probably gone down to the bar for a drink and locked me out. I flagged down one of the staff and got them to let me inside the room, and was surprised when I saw Jack wasn't downstairs. He was still lying in bed. That lazy oaf. Hadn't he heard me knocking? I angrily called out his name, rolling my eyes when he didn't respond. He was such a deep sleeper, it could be impossible to wake him sometimes. I walked over and shook his shoulder, but he still didn't stir. When I touched his cheek, his skin was hot and feverish, and sweat beaded his brow. Had he fallen sick, of all things, on the first day of our honeymoon? Muttering under my breath, I pulled back the cover and screamed as something small and dark scuttled out from my husband's shirt. It was some kind of bug with a dark carapace and far too many legs, and it disappeared beneath the covers as soon as I let out a screech. I turned my gaze back to Jack, his skin slick with sweat and his breathing heavy and raspy. When I slowly peeled up his shirt, there was a nasty red welt on his ribs, yellow pus oozing out of the wound. It smelled rancid, and I recoiled in disgust. Had the bug bitten him? I almost wanted to laugh at how pathetic it all was. Only Jack would manage to get bitten by some exotic bug on the first night of our honeymoon.
It was like he set out to ruin things for me on purpose. Honestly, I didn't deserve this. Shaking my head, I left Jack where he was and went back downstairs, spending the rest of the day having fun with Damien, because he was the only one who was treating me the way I should be treated on my honeymoon. I was sipping drinks with Damien in the hotel's lounge on the second evening of mine and Jack's honeymoon when a very flustered-looking hotel receptionist came to find me. She gestured to speak in private and informed me in a very somber manner that they had found my husband dead in our room upstairs from an apparently very poisonous insect bite. It took me a moment to register her words, and a sharp, bitter laugh escaped my lips, making the receptionist recoil in surprise. I swear, that man sure knows how to ruin a woman's honeymoon. Rent in the city was bleeding me dry, and I was desperate. When I found myself sifting through Craigslist ads looking for a roommate, I knew I was scraping the bottom of the barrel. A couple of responses came through, but they all seemed off. Guys asking for photos before even talking about the room, people with no job claiming they could pay rent. I almost gave up, thinking I'd be evicted by the end of the month, when Amy's message came through. Her email was polite, professional even. She was a young woman, just like me, early 20s, working in marketing, and new to the city. She had references, a stable job, and seemed as normal as anyone could be. I did my due diligence, checked her references, and everything seemed legit. Amy moved in a week later. At first, it was perfect. Amy was quiet, kept to herself, and always cleaned up after she used the kitchen or bathroom. She even paid her half of the rent early. I thought I'd lucked out, but things started changing after a few weeks. It began with a package. I came home from work one day to find a small brown box on our doorstep. No big deal, I figured Amy ordered something. But when I saw my name on it, I was confused. I hadn't bought anything. When I opened it, my confusion turned into disgust. Inside the box was a pair of dirty underwear, like really dirty, stained, used, and reeked of something foul. My stomach turned, and I immediately threw it in the trash. I texted Amy about it. Hey, weird question. Did you order anything under my name? Just got a weird package. Nope, haven't ordered anything lately, she replied. That's creepy. You should call the company. I shrugged it off as a bizarre mistake. Maybe someone had messed up an address or it was just some sick prank. But then another package came. This time, it was addressed to both me and Amy. And inside, a moldy sandwich and a clump of hair. Real human hair, tied together with a dirty string. I showed it to Amy, and she looked genuinely disturbed. That's disgusting, she said, her face pale. We should report this. Someone might be targeting us. We filed a complaint with the post office and left it at that. But the packages kept coming, each one stranger than the last. One was filled with chewed up gum stuck to photos of me and Amy, taken from inside the apartment. Another had a creepy broken doll with both our names carved into its chest. Each time, Amy would get more anxious, more scared, urging me to talk to the landlord or the police. One night, I couldn't sleep. I kept thinking about how someone knew where we lived, knew intimate details about us. The thought kept gnawing at me, and the pieces didn't fit together. I decided to search Amy's name online again, just to double check. That's when everything unraveled. Amy didn't exist. The name on the references she gave me? Fake. The company she claimed to work for? No record of her employment. Even the so-called friends she listed as references had no idea who I was talking about when I tried to call them back. Suddenly, it all made sense. The creepy packages, the personal details. Amy wasn't a victim. She was behind it all. The next morning, I confronted her. Who the hell are you, really? I asked, my voice trembling with both anger and fear. She didn't flinch. Instead, she smiled, cold and calculating. I was wondering when you'd figure it out, she said. But it's too late now.
Before I could respond, Amy was out the door, disappearing down the stairs before I could process what was happening. I ran to her room, my heart pounding, and found it completely empty. No clothes, no belongings. It was like she had never even lived there. The police couldn't trace her. Everything about her was fake, a ghost of someone who never existed. I was left with nothing but a series of terrifying packages and the haunting thought that Amy, if that was even her name, was still out there, watching, waiting for her next victim. I tapped my foot impatiently against the sidewalk, scanning my gaze across the faces of the people walking by me. It was just after 7 o'clock on a Friday evening, and I was waiting for my date to show up. We'd met on an online dating app, as so many people did these days, and after talking for a couple of weeks, had decided to meet up for our first in-person date. Since we lived an hour apart, we'd chosen a restaurant that was halfway between both our locations. We arranged to meet at 7, but it was already approaching 10 past, and there was still no sign of him. I was about to check my phone to see if he'd sent a message when someone tapped me on the shoulder, making me jump. I turned around with a start. "Angela?" the man said in front of me, my heart rate lowering when he said my name.
Yes, Mark?
The man smiled. "That's right." I studied him beneath the dim streetlights outside the restaurant. I'd only ever seen him through the photographs he'd sent me, and something about him seemed different in person, though I couldn't tell what it was. The resemblance was strong enough that it didn't set off any alarms, though. Maybe it was simply a matter of lighting, sharpening the contours of his face, making his eyes seem darker than they did online. "Shall we go inside?" Mark asked, gesturing towards the building behind me. I nodded, and we both stepped into the warm restaurant, the smell of Italian food tinging the air. A waitress showed us to a table in the back, in the shadowed corner of the room, and left us to browse the menus. I tried to quell the flutter of nerves in my stomach that was usual for a first date. I'd been on far too many of these recently, which hadn't led to anything, and after speaking with Mark online for just over 2 weeks, I was really hoping things worked out well between us. We seemed to have gotten along virtually just fine, sharing a few mutual interests and hobbies, so it really all boiled down to what he was like in person. After we placed our orders, I tried to avoid playing with the edge of the tablecloth as I searched for something to say. So far, he hadn't done much except for stare at me across the table, which was a little odd and made me self-conscious, as if he was looking at something on my face. I cleared my throat.
So, how's your dog?
Mark blinked at me, as if I'd said something weird. My dog?
Yeah, your dog. Holly, wasn't it? You sent me a picture of her yesterday.
Of course, Holly, he said, clearing his throat and nodding. She's doing well. My smile tensed, a knot forming in my stomach at his confusion. Did he forget he had a dog? Maybe he was just nervous about the date too, and that's why he was acting a little strange.
That's good. She seems like a sweetie.
Mm-hmm. Mark took a sip of his water and stared at me again, his eyes dark beneath the dim lighting. I started fiddling with the edge of the table, trying to shift the unease in my stomach. So far, Mark was nothing like I'd expected based on our interactions so far. Was this some kind of catfishing scandal? Pretending to be someone online that you were nothing like in real life? Since he wasn't offering up any conversation starters, I tried again to broach a discussion.
Did you have a good match this weekend?
He'd told me before that he played at the local football club with some of his friends every weekend, and he was usually pretty excited to talk about it. Although I didn't share the interest, I still tried to listen and support him in his hobby, since he'd done the same for me about my small craft business. It was okay, he muttered, tapping his fingers against the table as if he was bored.
Oh, just okay?
I asked with a soft sigh.
He was giving me nothing to work with, and it was making the conversation awkward.
Yep, just okay.
His tone had turned low and dull, as if he could no longer even bother keeping up the pretense of wanting to be here. I shifted awkwardly in my seat. If we hadn't already ordered food, I would have just left there and then, but I didn't want to cause trouble for the restaurant, so I stared uncomfortably at the wall behind him until it arrived. His behavior was even more strange when we started to eat. He stared at me the whole time he was shoveling pasta into his mouth, the whole display grotesque and discomforting. As we ate in awkward silence, I was already trying to think of excuses to get away as soon as I could. This was not going the way I had imagined. Not after speaking with Mark for 2 weeks and thinking we would actually get on well. Apparently, that had been a gross misjudgment on my part. It was always hard to figure out a person's true personality online. He finished well before I did, and he spent the last 5 minutes watching me eat. Even when I asked him to kindly not stare, he ignored my wish and kept doing it, his dark eyes boring into mine like I was some kind of painting to be examined. I hastily finished eating and called the waitress over for the bill. "Can I interest you in any of our desserts, or..." "No, thank you," I said sharply, shooting her an apologetic smile. "Just the bill would be fine. Thank you. And if you could split it between us..."
"I'll pay," Mark offered, but I shot him a hard look.
"No, it's okay. I'll pay for myself. Thank you." The last thing I wanted in this kind of situation was to owe him anything. I'd rather pay for my own dinner and be on my way as fast as I could.
Mark cocked his head and smiled at me knowingly, which made my skin crawl. Why did I even bother getting my hopes up for this date? They always ended up being creeps. Did I really just have that kind of luck when it came to dating? As soon as we paid, I gathered my things and stood up to leave. Mark was right behind me. Out in the fresh air, Mark went to reach for my arm, but I lively dodged out of the way. "Do you need a lift home?" he asked, and I looked at him in disgust.
"No, thank you. I can get home just fine by myself."
"No need to be so rude," he sneered at me, the first proper emotion he displayed all night.
"Trust me, I'm not the one who's been rude tonight," I said, before turning away and hurrying down the street.
I had planned on either Mark taking me home or getting a taxi, but since it was a lot earlier than I'd expected, I ended up walking. It was barely after 8 o'clock, and while the sky was starting to darken, there was enough people and lights on the route that I didn't feel in any danger. I did, however, check once behind me as I was leaving the restaurant to make sure Mark wasn't following me, but by that point, he'd already disappeared. As I walked briskly down the street trying to shake off the weirdness of the evening, I couldn't help but replay the dinner in my mind. Something about Mark had been off, really off. I turned down a side street, eager to reach the main road and hail a cab. The street was quieter here, lined with dark storefronts and flickering lamplights. My skin prickled as I felt a sudden wave of unease settle over me. I turned my head slightly, scanning the shadows, but there was nothing. Just my imagination running wild after a disastrous date. That's when I heard it. Footsteps. Faint and steady, coming from behind me. I stopped in my tracks, my heart thudding in my chest. The footsteps stopped too. Slowly, I glanced over my shoulder, my stomach lurching. No one. The street was empty. Eerily quiet now, as if the city had fallen away, leaving me stranded in some liminal space. I quickened my pace, almost breaking into a jog, and heard the footsteps again. Closer this time, deliberate, like they were matching mine. I didn't want to turn around again, but I couldn't help it. When I did, I saw him, Mark, standing in the shadows about 20 feet away, his head cocked in that same creepy way he'd done at the restaurant, a smile twisting his face. "I thought you said you were leaving," he whispered, his voice carrying through the still air. I opened my mouth to scream, but before I could, he raised something in his hand, a small phone. A flash went off. Then, in a low voice, he murmured, "You'll be perfect for my collection." And then, he was gone, swallowed by the shadows, leaving me frozen in place,
my blood running cold.